Thank you, thank you, thank you very much, Jeff, and thank you to everyone who's put this evening together. Thank you so much to Claudia and Ava and everyone here who's worked so hard. And happy International Women's Day. It strikes me as entirely appropriate that we're launching this tour and this campaign across the country on this day, because while women have made enormous gains, and a lot of the women in this room have been part of making this happen, there are ways to undermine equality rights, which don't mean taking away equality rights on the books, right? There are lots of ways. It's called the Washington Consensus, neoliberalism, privatization, deregulation. You just take out the structures from under us, and it doesn't matter what laws are on the books. So it's really important that we put this in context today. Well, we're here to talk to each other about a very deep concern that a number of us have and we think is not particularly out there on the radar screen, even of activists. Not since 1984, when Brian Mulroney first went to New York when he was a newly minted prime minister, and he declared to a blue chip American business audience, Canada's open for business. Not since then has the groundwork been laid for such a big new change in the relationship between Canada and the U.S. The same economic and political elite that advanced the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement 20 years ago is back. They have a new agenda. It's the same old agenda, but it comes in a brand new package. And they are very anxious and very organized to complete what they started then. The C.D. Howe Institute, right-wing think tank, calls it a big idea, or the big idea, and they have produced no fewer than 13 major papers in 2 years promoting economic integration with the U.S. The Canadian Council of Chief Executives, that used to be the Business Council on National Issues, Tom DeKino still at the head, calls it the North American Security and Prosperity Initiative. And they've set up what they call an action team of defense and business leaders from both sides of the border to promote and advance this agenda. The Fraser Institute calls it economic union. They don't fool around with any other kind of language. We're playing around with the best title for it, but we have been calling it continental integration or deep integration, or perhaps more accurately, we should be calling it political assimilation, because that's what we're talking about. Now, of course, these think tanks and these corporate lobby groups are not acting alone. They have a lot of influential academics and economists working with them. They have the monolithic right-wing print media in our country 100% behind them. And they have powerful forces in both the conservative and the liberal parties that are working with them as well. And as in the 1980s, they have been working tirelessly to promote this next level of economic political integration between Canada and the U.S. But what's different about this in the 1980s, and I was there and a lot of us in this room were fighting it then, is that they learned a lesson from the 1980s, and they're not doing it noisily, they're not making a lot of fuss about it, they haven't bought a bunch of expensive ads, they don't want an election fought on it, because they came real close to losing that one, and they only won because there were three parties, one in favor of free trade and two against, and the two parties that were against split the vote. And they know that it was a squeaker and that they really actually, in fact, lost the hearts and minds of the majority of Canadians. So they don't want to go back to the public because they know we would not follow them where they want to go. And we don't have the now joy, when I think back on it, of the blusterings of Brian Mulroney. He was a gift to us all because he just said, it'll change Canada forever, give me 20 years, you'll never recognize it. Nobody's talking that kind of language now, although it still is the same agenda. Now, why now? Well, there's a unique political moment because a bunch of things have come together. The Bush administration, which I think we in this room would probably agree is the most reactionary, autocratic, right-wing American administration in recent history, has reacted to the events of 9/11 in a very particular and specific way, and that is that their war on terrorism is the most important political project in the United States now and for some foreseeable future. And so it was inevitable that for now and for a long time, perhaps in the future, security is going to trump economic and trade issues for most Americans. And so what's happened, of course, is that the border has become a contentious area, a contentious issue, and the trucks, I don't know how many of you have been to some of the border areas, but the trucks are lined up for kilometers and kilometers. And of course, they're putting pressure on their MPs to do something about this. So this becomes a very opportune moment. Not that I would ever suggest that our big business community is opportunistic, but there is an opportunity here. So they've looked at this reality, our business elite, and they have also looked at the fact that after 15 years of free trade, just as we predicted, there has been a very deep merging of our economies. Trade with the United States, or the growth of our exports to the U.S., jumped 250% in those years, while trade between provinces and with other parts of the world quite dramatically declined. So 87% of all our exports now go to the U.S., which means we are very vulnerable to what the U.S. is thinking and their moods and so on. And we also know, and they also know, that 10,000 Canadian, healthy Canadian companies have been taken over in those years, mostly by American business interests. So the merging has taken place and has been very good for the big business community in North America. The 150 companies that make up what was then the Business Council on National Issues have grown in their assets. In 1988, they were worth $1 trillion together. Now they're worth $2.3 trillion, and just in 15 years, they've grown so fast. So this has been very good for it, and they like it, and they want more. And then, of course, the moment may be just perfect politically with Paul Martin and the new cabinet, and I'm not going to take time on that because we have Murray here who's going to talk to us about the Paul Martin government and his, I think, his rightful contention that it's probably as right-wing or perhaps more right-wing than the Mulroney government and Mulroney's cabinet that brought us this first agenda. So now we have the Canadian Council of Chief Executives and the think tanks that they've funded saying, okay, well, the constellation of factors have come together to make the moment right, and the moment calls for this strategy, and that is, let us link economic prosperity to security. We'll say they're one and the same issue and that you can't have one without the other, and we will make changes to the Canada-US border that make it so that we can convince the Americans that it's okay, that border will become as benign as if you were moving across provincial borders in Canada or state borders in the United States. That's the goal, and it's pretty well clearly stated if you look at their documents. So how are they going to convince Washington that this is going to happen? Well, they have what they call their big ideas. I'm just going to briefly go through what the core five big ideas, actually, and here we talk about their 10 big ideas as being 10 bad ideas and how we have some better ideas. But the core of their ideas are the following, and these are already all of them one way or another in the works. The first is to have Canada abandon its historic commitment to multilateralism and align itself increasingly with an increasingly unilateralist American government. Now, the United States, as you know, has a long history as a rogue nation, refusing to support international treaties and conventions like the Kyoto Protocol, the Landmines Treaty, the Biosafety Convention, the ban on nuclear weapons, and so on, and many, many others. But under George Bush, this isolationism has dramatically increased, and the U.S. has adopted what they call the first strike position, which is basically reserving for themselves the right to attack countries that they see as hostile to their interests first and unilaterally, and of course outside the United Nations Security Council. Yet this bad idea is being promoted, and they would have, very clearly and openly, they would have Canada abandon our historic and once respected international position on our multilateral role in the world in favor of U.S. foreign policy. The second core bad idea of the core that they're putting forward, of course, then, and this is already being negotiated by our Defense Minister, David Pratt, who was in favor of the Iraq War, did not want Canada not going along with that war. And that is Canada joining George Bush's North American missile defense system. Now, if we did this, it would ensure that Canada's support and it would ensure Canada's support and involvement in preemptive wars initiated by the United States. It would place a substantial part of Canada's military directly under American command. It would ensure that any terrorist attack on the United States would now be a terrorist attack on Canada. And let's face it, if they're going to shoot down some missiles, they're not going to wait till they're over the U.S. They're going to get them while they're over Canadian space. It would, of course, force Canada to completely abandon any pretense of peacekeeping, which we've damn near done now, which is something people need to know. We're at our lowest point in terms of the percentage of our military who are engaged in peacekeeping since the Second World War. And it would significantly boost our military budget. We would have to play our part in this process. And of course, perhaps most insidious, it would involve Canada in the weaponization of space, forcing us to abandon our long-term opposition to this policy. When the Canadian government says, oh, we'd never participate in the weaponization of space, excuse me, just listen to Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and those. All of the people surrounding Bush have said openly, oh yeah, it's about the weaponization of space. It's exactly where we're going. And China has said, you go there, we follow, you're not going there by yourself. So this is very clearly, we would be participating in the next level of war, which you're going to hear much more about in wonderful detail in a few minutes. Bad idea number three is another heavily promoted bad idea as one of these core five, and that's to place a Canadian to put in place a Canadian version of the U.S. Homeland Security measures, which is basically an American security perimeter, North American security perimeter, or what Premier Campbell here calls ziplocking North America. In the U.S., anti-terrorism laws routinely violate the civil rights and the civil liberties of Americans, and this has been documented in many ways. Canada's already gone a long way to cooperating in this. We've enacted Bill C-36, which has diminished the right of Canadians under our charter. We signed the Smart Border Accord, which means that we're now harmonizing our immigration and refugee policy in line with what the U.S. wants. And we've just adopted a Safe Third Country Agreement that means, for instance, Latin American refugee claimants that come by land through the United States to Canada, which has been in a very traditional way, people coming out of dictatorships have been able to find safe haven. They'd no longer be able to come to Canada. They have to be turned back and seek authority to claim a refugee status in the United States. So all of this is already in the works, but none of it's enough for the proponents of this bad idea who are calling for what they call a national security policy with the same draconian powers in Canada that exist now in the United States.